Good morning, La Sierra University Church. Today we have the honor of continuing our sermon series via Stories That Shape Us. And today we get to hear from Rosa. Now, yes, give her some love. Absolutely. Now, if you have been in this community for a while now, or even for a short time, you have probably seen Rosa. In fact, I don't know if I told you this, but I first met Rosa when I came to interview here at La Sierra. I was here incognito. I had stayed after the search committee had asked me to stay and check out the church service, and I walked into the cafeteria, and I saw you, and you were serving with just this beautiful smile and just this spirit of peace in the air, and I just felt, wow, she's so kind. And then I came, and I saw you in the kitchen again, and I kept seeing you in the kitchen, and I have just seen how hard you work, not only inside the kitchen, but all in the different areas of our community, and we are so thankful and blessed to have you and your family as part of our community. We are eager to hear your story today.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Feliz Sábado. It's a privilege for me to be up here and sharing a little bit of my journey and the people that have made my life meaningful. Before I start, I would like to read 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So I'm a beautiful mother because I have two beautiful daughters. They make me beautiful, Marianne and Esther. I work for the Corona Unified School District as an assistant, assisting children with autism. I love working with them because they have taught me so much. These children are so gifted, and they have so much potential. My prayers are with these families. After this small intro, I have been trying to escape bios for the past summers, but Pastor Devo asked me again, and I couldn't say no, so here I am. For the glory of God, I will share this testimony. I was born on May 18, 1976, in the beautiful country of El Salvador. My full name is Rosa Paulina. You all know what a Rosa is, but a curious fact about my middle name is that it stands for small and humble. So for that reason, my family and friends call me Rosita, Little Rose. I think it kind of fits me. I was the first granddaughter from both sides of my family. So yes, I got all the attention. El Salvador was at war when I was born. So my father, Miguel, decided to come to the U.S. when I was 6 months. After that, my mother, Araceli, followed along when I was 2 years old. I was left under the care of my two grandmothers, meaning to say that I lived in two homes. Each of them owned their own restaurants on the same road called Carretera Puerto La Libertad. Mama Paulina's, which was my dad's side, was called El Camino Real. My teacher would call it the food factory, similar to Porto's, with a huge variety of international dishes, including local dishes. And Mama Rosa's restaurant, my mom's side, is called La Posada. It serves traditional Salvadoran dishes, but famous for the quesadillas. It's an outdoor place with kiosk and a beautiful waterfall hidden on the back. She became a widow at age 36 with 5 children and worked hard to pay for the restaurant's debt. Both started at very little and held on to their faith. In both places, I did not only learn about food, but I also witnessed determination, courage, and faith. I felt loved, safe, and sometimes I felt like a spoiled princess. Later, when I had cousins, I enjoyed swimming in the river, climbing fruit trees, milking the cows, roasting cashews, and more. Life was not always good because of the war. Sometimes we had to cross the river and find refuge on the other side at my great-grandfather's house. because we lived near the main road and there was battles going on and it was not pretty. So one night we were not able to leave and Mama Rosa was asked to feed the government soldiers that were passing by. She fed them a good meal and then the soldiers left. But later in the middle of the night, a small group of rebels came looking for food too. She got up quickly, made some sandwiches for them. She could not ignore the fact that these were very young children holding rifles. It was a dangerous thing to do, to feed rebels back then, because you would be considered a traitor. She was a brave soul and would do anything to help. She taught me the ability to help with my mind and with my hands. Sadly, in 1983, when I was 7 years old, I had to leave my country. My mom came to get me, and I remember at the airport, I was holding to the bars, and I was crying, and she told me, "You will get to go to Disneyland and see where Mickey and Minnie live, and you will also meet your little brother, Miguelito." Somehow I agreed, maybe the Disneyland thing, and got on that plane with my aching heart thinking of everyone I was leaving behind. When I finally got to LA, I had a huge culture shock. Why? Because all I saw was buildings and a little bit of green. What happened to that beautiful green, right? And my dad seemed to be a very likable man. He was fun, hardworking, and my mom was very submissive and quiet at that time. Little did I know that I was going to grow up in a home where my mom did not have a voice, and where my dad's alcoholism will take his charm away. Our home felt like a small cage, not what I imagined. God knew everything and placed family members that were Adventists in my mom's life. They took us to church, and I was so grateful for them. I joined the Pathfinder Club when I was 8, wearing no uniform, and went to Sabbath school too. My dad was still battling with alcohol and did not attend church with us. So we lived that kind of life and hoped for the best. In 1992, the war ended, thank God, and we all went back. My parents decided to have their own restaurant. By that time, my second sibling, Giovanni, was 3 years old, so we moved. I had finally adjusted to the life here in LA, but knowing that my grandmothers were there made me feel happy. So I went to school, and after school, I continued helping my parents at their restaurant. Then my third little brother, Gene, was born there. Unfortunately, we all stopped attending church, and now my mom became an alcoholic to escape that reality. Living under these circumstances made me very anxious and insecure. I wanted my parents to stop. I didn't like this kind of life. My high school years were long and miserable. I felt like a failure and wanted to end my life. I felt that I was moved from one school to the other. By then, I had no hope. So when I was 19, I got courage. And I talked to my dad and told him how I felt and how I had carried through all those years in 7, so much pain, so much pain. That I could not continue living this way and wanted to just let it all out. He listened. He did not interrupt. He apologized for all the harm he had caused all those years. I told him I was moving out to Mama Rosa's house for my last year of high school. Thankfully, with the support of my two grandmothers, I earned my high school diploma and that was one of my first biggest accomplishments. At my 20s. My grandmother took me back to church and I decided to get baptized on July 6, 1997. I had found my first love again, and I was in my happiest moment, serving the Lord and knowing that one day my mother and my siblings will join us as well. My grandmother then sent me to college. I did one full year there. She then realized it was time for me to come back to the U.S. and continue here. I was 21 when I came back. My dear Masariego family took me in. I went to church with them. It was the same church that I went to when I was 8. I put my family in prayers and my mom to overcome from alcoholism. I did not know that there was someone praying already for my mom. She came back to the U.S. and was finally baptized. She was an answered prayer. Do you want to know how I met Marianne and Esther's dad? Well, back then, the church I went to when I was 8, there was this boy. He made the Sabbath school teachers cry. He was daring, a strong-willed child. People would say, there's no hope for this kid. So if you have a child like that, there's hope. Yeah. Well, when I came back at 21, this boy was transformed. He did not act that way, and he didn't look the same. So I worked with him for 3 years, and family members would come around and said, hey, he's a good match for you. I said, no, never, he's too serious, no. From there, I learned to say, learned to never say never. So, well, because I did not like him. A year before, I had told God, there's something between me and you that if you ever think that I'm gonna meet someone, there's gonna be 4 things, but only you and I know of these things. So one day, he asked me, as a friend, he came and asked me, hey, do you wanna go to a Christmas banquet with me? I said, sure. So we went, we spent some time at the banquet and then left. After the banquet, we talked and noticed we had a lot in common. So I think we clicked. 4 days later, he invited me to go for a cup of hot chocolate, and that's when he said, can I ask you something? But first, let's pray. That's number one. After the prayer, he asked me if I could be his girlfriend. He said, if you say yes, I will be so honored and will not ask you to kiss me. That's dumb. I will set out a date to meet with your mom and ask her permission first. That's 3. And if you say yes, I know your grandmothers are very important in your life. And I'm willing, okay, to go and ask for their approval too. That was 4. So I said, God, he's the one? But I didn't like him. So how could I say no to him? Imagine, he did all those things I had to ask God. Well, to make it short, he wanted to get married in 3 months. I said, no, that's too soon. In October, he got 2 plane tickets and went to ask for my hand. By this time, of course, by October, I was in love with him. We got married on February 17, 2002. We had our firstborn on my mother's birthday, May 1st, 2003. So I said, Feliz cumpleaños, mama. I fell in love with this child. She's right there. I told God, I can have 100 babies like her. Marianne was so calm that I could feed her, then I could change her, she would go to sleep, and it was repeat again. She was a good starter baby. Yeah. I think she is Joy from the movie Inside Out, but she says she's anxiety. No why. After her, unfortunately, I had 3 miscarriages. Very hurtful and painful. But one day, I went to a physical and was told I was expecting. I was shocked. I said, what? I could not believe it. Marianne had been praying for a sibling. So she was going to be happy. Soon, we were told by the doctor that it needed to be terminated because there was no activity on part of the brain. What do you think I did? I changed doctors. No. I changed doctors, and I continued with the pregnancy. So I got preeclampsia towards the 7th month mark. My blood pressure was really high and about to get a seizure. I really thought it was the end. I asked God to save us both. I had just signed for a C-section when Esther said, nope, here I come. Esther did not wait any longer. She came at 32 weeks, and weighed 3.5 pounds. She, however, struggled with breathing. Her lungs were not fully developed and had a heart vessel that was not closed yet. She was going to get a procedure done when Pastor Huerta, Minerva's brother, stepped in. And he said, wait, what's going on? And then the doctors explained. He said, he asked me, hey, can I pray over her before they take her? And I said, sure, God brought you here. So he prayed for her, and then they took her in. They did one last examination, and then they came back. And they said, well, she doesn't need a surgery anymore. The vessel closed. And I said, praise God. Isn't God good? Yes, that's our great God. So for God be the glory, she's alive and well. She's here with us. Now, fast forward, in 2013, my husband Ruben had signed up to be a bone marrow donor. He found a perfect match, 10 out of 10. On July 13, he was ready to donate, and it was a success. He was so happy to have helped the child with leukemia that needed it. On that same year, in November, we moved here. We searched many areas, but God brought us to the 92505 area. The following year, in 2014, Ruben, my husband, started feeling sick with a terrible cough and headache. On November 10, on a Monday morning, he went to Glendale Adventist to get checked. They did all the tests. The doctor said his blood counts and platelets were very low, so they decided to give him some blood transfusion. He got it, but the body just kept it sucking it all up. Doctors decided to keep him in and do a bone marrow biopsy the next day. So that Tuesday, Pastor Huerta again, I don't know who called him, the Holy Spirit, sent him on a God's appointment. He prayed for him and said, Ruben, do you know what this is? He's like, yes. So he anointed him and prayed. My cousins also brought my daughters to spend time with Ruben. He told them, remember, solamente cree. When there's nothing else to do, just believe. That was one of Esther's famous line from Sabbath school. He also received visit from co-workers and church elders. They sang and prayed. The next Wednesday morning, several specialists came to talk to us after the biopsy results. A pathologist, oncologist, neurologist, cardiologist, and his primary doctors, they all came. The oncologist stayed behind and looked at us in the eye and said, do you want to know the good news or the bad news? Ruben said, give us the bad news first. He said, you have acute leukemia, but the good news is that it is curable. I will start treatment right away, and you'll be good. So Ruben, as soon as the doctor left, said, come here, sit down. We need to talk. So I went and I listened. He was always 99.9 right when he talked to me. So he talked about the worst case scenarios if anything were to happen to him, to be prepared and know what to do. He said, I leave enough savings for you to be stable for a year, so you don't have to move the girls around. It's been 10 years. God's numbers are not our numbers. He said, if I die, I said, no, nobody's dying here. The doctor said, you'll be fine with treatment. Then he said, I want you to forgive me. I said, no, you forgive me for not being a good wife or a better wife. He said, no, don't worry about the past or that kind of forgiveness. We had food, you know, we washed our feet. We had communion with the girls 2 weeks ago. Remember, I'm not asking for that kind of forgiveness. I need you to forgive me because maybe I might not be able to provide for you in the future. I might not be able to see my girls graduate, or I might not be able a chance to give them away. I'm sure God put all these words for me to hear and get a closure. Ruben continued, remember Pastor Chris's sermon? The one with the red balloon floating around the church? where the whole be well started? Well, in my head, I can only listen to God's voice telling me, listen to him. His words of affirmation from Pastor Chris's sermon played in my mind and in my thoughts. This is not our home. Our home is in heaven. Be prepared to meet your Creator. He was right. We were having an encounter with God that day. His presence was felt in the room. He had come to be with us, quietly, but he was there. What came to my mind was our wedding day, when we were in the altar saying our vows. This is what it meant to be together in sickness and in good health, till death do us part. He then said, in a sarcastic way, remember, when we get to heaven, don't try to chase me around and try to kiss me. That was a bit of his humor to lift my spirit up. My husband was not a perfect man, but I knew that in his flaws, he was a man after God's heart. After talking for about an hour, he said, let's pray and then call my family and I'll talk to them. So we called them. We called his mom, his brother in Japan, sister in Arizona. His sister Vicky came and he told her, I love you. Come back to church, Vicky. Suddenly, he took off his eyeglasses and told us, rubbed his eyes, and he said, I don't like this. I see you all blurred out, and I think I'm losing my sight. He said he was cold, so the nurse got him a warm blanket. I wiped his cold sweat from his nose. He then said, my leg is feeling numb. But then he lifted his hand and said, Lord, if you think I'm ready, take me. I said, Lord, listen to your servant Reuben. And I told Reuben to hold on to Jesus' hand. He's right here. He lifted his finger one more time, and he turned it, as if saying, I'm dizzy or I'm leaving. His head dropped. I suddenly grabbed my sister-in-law, and we were just shaking and crying. By that time, the team came in, and they were shouting, code blue, code red, all these codes, and they took him. Later, after a few minutes, they came looking for me, and they took me where they had him. The nurses and doctors gathered around outside the room to tell me that Reuben was pronounced brain dead. There was a vein that ruptured in his head. He had been checked by 3 different doctors, and there was no going back. Neurologists said that this was the best thing that could have happened to him because he was in no pain. I will never forget those last moments when he peacefully told God, Lord, take me if you think I'm ready. It was a humbling experience seeing someone go. My perspective of life changed. We are so fragile, a vapor. Our lives are in his palms, always. I received peace and assurance that I shall see him again one day when Jesus returns. And may that be also your assurance if you have lost someone you dearly love. So my husband, God has been so faithful that my husband lives inside me. He's very dear, lives inside my daughters. And I know that God's promises will continue and carry us on. The reason why I'm here is because my husband chose this church. He said that my girls had a future here. He also told me I could be an active member and serve. So after his passing, I got involved. I wanted to keep his dream and ideas of service living inside us. Thanks to La Sierra University Church, we have been invited to participate in different ministries. There are so many family members and friends that have supported us in these times of grieving and healing. Thank you for the multiple hugs, warm smiles, multiple car rides. We thank you. You are a blessing. May God bless you. Thank you and be well.
Thank you, Rosa and Esther, for being part of our community and sharing your story. I want to invite you to please stand with me for the hearing of the word. For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind. Thanks be to God. The word of God. I want to thank you so much for being here this morning and for not only hearing the stories that we have had this summer, but also being a space where people feel safe and open to tell their stories. This morning, I quickly want to share a little story that happened to me when I was in college. I had a friend named Meredith, and we all may have a friend similar to this one. My friend Meredith really loved scaring people, like literally scaring people, so that they would yell or flinch or something. And so it was my junior year of college, and so I had Meredith come up to me and say, it is going to be my mission this year in college, before I graduate in the spring, to scare you as many times as possible. Now, you would think, this is probably not a great friend you should have in your life if they are choosing to scare you all the time, but Meredith was a really good friend, and I thought it was a little bit of a joke. So I cautiously and carefully walked around campus, making sure that I knew where she was at all times. And after a while, I figured, oh, she's not going to scare me. It was all just a joke, a ploy, just to get my attention. She wouldn't actually do that to a friend of hers, right? I was wrong. Several days later, I was coming out of the bathroom in our administrative building and coming around the corner when all of a sudden I heard the loudest boo and her jumping in front of me. I almost had to turn around and go back into the bathroom. I was terrified. This continued after a couple weeks and a couple months. She just kept scaring me. I would come into my dorm room. I don't even know how she got a key to my dorm room, but I would come into my dorm room and she would pop out of the closet or underneath my bed. This happened a couple other times when I was coming out of class in different buildings. I don't know how she had my schedule. It's like she had a tracker on me. She knew my every move. I was even in the library at one time, and she came and scared me, and again, I screamed, and the library is not the place where you should be screaming. The worst one yet, and which really built me up with fear, is when I was in the cafeteria getting my salad. I had perfected this salad. I was at Union for 2 years already, and I knew exactly what to put in this salad. And I was there with my little plate getting my salad, and I was putting the dressing on when all of a sudden she came up behind me, grabbed my backpack, and said, "Boo!" It scared me so much. I had so much fear in my heart that I tossed my salad in the air, literally vegetables and lettuce going everywhere. Like, the salad was on the ground and everything, and I was coated with ranch. It was not a great time. However, fear is inevitable. Fear is unfortunately part of our life, and I fear being scared, among many other things, and I know if that we took some time this morning to go around our space and to those who are watching online to talk about our fears, I'm sure we could all bond over different ones. I was reading this week a survey done online by a group of adults. There were 2,634 adults living in the U.S., and it surveyed the different degrees of variation of fear that they have in their hearts regarding different scenarios. The top five things that people feared the most was 1, loved ones dying. The second one, loved ones becoming seriously ill. The third one, are ourselves becoming ill. The fourth, not having enough money for retirement. And the fifth one, mass shootings and gun violence. The list continued to round out the top five as losing physical mobility, corruption of government officials, chronic diseases, high medical bills, and getting the US getting involved in another world war. These are just some of the top 10. As I scrolled down the list of 72 scenarios of which people fear, I saw some that could relate to some of us here or even to myself. Number 24, getting older. Number 29, the restriction of women's rights. Number 32, air pollution. Number 44, being misunderstood by those who love us. And lastly, 71 and 72, which I think is all on our minds, a zombie apocalypse and being taken by aliens. I share this all to say that when we think of the word fear, fear is more than just what we fear ourselves, or even what is just on the top 10 list of a list that surveyed roughly 2,500 people. Our fears are based on the threat of harm, real or imaginary, within our own stories and our family history. Your fear may be connected to moving to another country, feeling unsure about finishing school, feeling and seeing your child sick, or even losing somebody closest to you. And yet, in the midst of these emotions, 2 Timothy 1:7 rings loudly saying, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." 2 Timothy points us to 3 different promises of God's faithfulness of goodness that we are going to take a look at today. The first one is that there is power over fear. There is power over fear, 2 Timothy says. In 2 Timothy, we see that both Paul and Timothy were experiencing opposition. Paul had been thrown into prison for preaching the gospel and was nearly alone. His situation was quite dire. Meanwhile, Timothy was also in the thick of his own struggles as well, struggling against false teachers within the church. Even among the fear in which anyone would have in those situations, the Apostle Paul reminds Timothy, and now us, that fear does not come from God, and it is not part of God's plan for our lives. Now, this is the sticky part, because if we look in the Bible, there is also 140-ish references of the Bible talking about fear of God, fearing God. So you may be thinking, how can one faithful believe that God's power is over fear when fear itself is mentioned in the correlation of the one casting it out? The fear in which Paul is speaking of is the fear in which our human minds race to. Our human minds race to the fear that causes physical pain and mental pain, sadness and distress. However, the 140-ish references in the Bible that talk about fearing God does not desire to place harm upon us. Yet it directs the eyes of the beloved to not shrink back from the fear in God, but to have a deep recognition for God and to stand in awe of who he is, of the power and holiness and majesty that God is. When we encounter this fear, no matter how it may be or what it may be, we can tap into this divine power. It enables us to stand firm, to persevere, to move forward with confidence, knowing that God is with us every single step of the way. With God, there is power over fear. 2 Timothy 1:7 also shows us that love conquers fear. When we read 1 John 4:18, a verse that many of you may know very well, it says, "Perfect love casts out," okay, maybe some of us know, but "perfect love casts out fear." That's exactly right. This love is not just merely an emotion, but a powerful force that comes from God and God alone. God's love is one of which that does not just pass by like a soft and easy breeze on a hot day, yet it is one that welcomes us home like Grandma Rosa. This love surrounds us, it enfolds us, and it drives away any shadow of fear. God's love surrounds us, enfolds us, and drives away any shadow of fear. And when we are gripped by fear, we can turn to God's abounding love. This love in which reminds us that we are deeply cherished and loved and valued in God. And through that, hopefully, we can have the courage to love others fearlessly. To love not only our friends and our families and those within our pews, but also to love our neighbors, our foreigners, our unhomed friends, to love the least of these, and to love our enemies. It also teaches us to do something that may be a little bit harder, and that is to even extend grace in the face of fear. It reminds us that each individual is created for a purpose and for a plan. It reminds us that each of us is created in the image of God and the one who first loved and introduced us to love. As we immerse ourselves into God's love, fear loses its grip in our hearts and in our minds, and we can walk forward with the confidence of everlasting love, of God's faithfulness and goodness. With God, there is no power over fear, and with God, there is love that conquers fear. The last thing that 2 Timothy teaches us is that a sound mind is our anchor amidst fear. In the midst of the chaos and uncertainty of life, God offers us clarity and wisdom. A sound mind is not immune to fear. A sound mind is not immune to fear, but God allows us to approach fear with rationality and discernment. In times of fear, we can pray for God's guidance and wisdom. And one thing that really stood out to me in Rosa's story is the fact that she continued to reflect on how God had been faithful in the past to continue to anchor her to what situations she was enduring in the present. We can continue to reflect upon God's goodness and faithfulness of the work of our past, how each story levels up to the next one, and how it plays a vital role in who we are today and who we can be tomorrow. In times of fear, we can pray for God's guidance and wisdom, God's promises, knowing that God works all things together for good. A few weeks ago, I was with a group of people and we saw Inside Out 2. Rosa had mentioned this movie, and if you have not seen it, I would highly recommend. But in this movie, if you know anything about the series, it's about this young girl named Riley, and it shows the inner workings of her mind through different emotions that show up. The emotion that really stood out to me, as of course I was putting this talk together, was fear. Fear is pictured here. Fear is scared of everything, of course. Fear says things like, "I'm sure glad you told me earthquakes were a myth, Joy. Otherwise, I'd be terrified right now." Fear also says, "All right, we didn't die today. I can call that an unqualified success." And even though at times I get a little frustrated at fear because it feels like fear is holding Riley back from the things of which she could do and the emotions in which she is feeling, it helps bring Riley's life to a beautiful place because all of the emotions are working together. With fear and joy and embarrassment and even anxiety, everything comes together to create Riley's beautiful life. Fear will always be among us. Fear will always exist and will be running around in our minds like a little purple figure that thinks that it's our last day on earth. But God says that through that fear, we can find joy. And through that fear, God is always there. What stood out to me in Rose's talk today and just talking with her is that she has this faith in knowing that God is always with her. That through every moment of good and bad, fear and joy, she has leaned upon God, praising God for the faithfulness thus far and the faithfulness that was yet to come, reminding us that through fear, she showed us that God's power is strong, that through love, fear has no strength, and that God is the anchor of faithfulness and goodness forever and ever. Rosa's story made me think of a song that we have sung here many times here at our church, and actually one that is our closing song for today. the goodness of God. As I listened to the words this week over and over, I was reminded of how good the goodness of God is. The first few lines say this: I love you, Lord. Oh, your mercies never fail me. All my days I was held in your hands. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head down, I will sing of the goodness of God. Let us collectively this morning sing of the goodness of God.